Yes, we are. This is lecture one for Nursing Research Search 3100, and we're in the summer. Okay. See, it all works. Are you impressed? Okay. All right. Is nursing an art or a science? It's a question that is asked all the time in nursing. And I have to kind of stay by my computer to talk, so I can't walk, so they will record me. So, the classic answer is what?
Both.
Right. In many of your classes, you work with research as an art. A lot of our skills, we did massage this morning in skills. That was an art. We talked about therapeutic communication. We talked about being there for the patient. That's all more an artful side of nursing. What we're going to be talking about in this course is the pure science of nursing. Nursing as a science. We look at it far less as a soft science, and we look at it as more of a hard science. Your soft sciences are psychology, sociology, anthropology. Hard sciences are biology, chemistry, physics, okay? So we're going to kind of look at nursing like that, like you did your chem course. That's why it's so very different than this course is so very different than your other courses in this curriculum. We're going to look at nursing as a science. And how is that science grown and built? Ours is a relatively young science. We're going to talk about that. How do we grow the science? The science of physics is centuries old, right? Astronomy, centuries old. Nursing as a science is not, which I think is very exciting. Florence Nightingale said it best, okay? I love Flo. I think she was a brilliant woman. And she said, nursing is an art. And if it is to be made an art, it requires an exclusive devotion, as hard a preparation as any painter or sculptor's work. For what is having to do with dead canvas or dead marble compared with having to do with a living body, the temple of God's spirit? It is one of the fine arts. I had almost said the finest of arts. Okay, so she really felt it was an art, but she then spoke to the technical details of being a painter and all that. We've grown that, those technical aspects, into the pure science of nursing, and that's what we're going to talk about. So what is research? What is nursing research? Simply a process which allows nurses to ask questions that are aimed at gaining new knowledge to improve patient care. Research exists in all disciplines. Okay? So if you're in English, you're doing research. If at the doctoral level, there are English scientists in literature who look at new interpretations. There are scientists, obviously, in physics. There are scientists in philosophy. So even the soft sciences, knowledge is gained and generated from new writing, new ways of looking at things. Nursing, we have the hard science, the chemistry, the biology, and all behind us. We also have some of the soft science, the anthropology, and philosophy, and psychology. And we, like those other sciences, are built on a knowledge base. As we gain more knowledge, the science grows. So this course is about the growth of nursing science. That is done through research. And this isn't the research, we'll discuss exactly what it is. A process which allows nurses to ask questions, answer the questions, and gain new knowledge that's going to affect patient care. So unlike chemistry or philosophy or anthropology, they are gaining knowledge often for knowledge's sake, right? A chemist is going to develop something new for the sake of expanding the science. What's so wonderful and unique about nursing is that everything we do comes back to patient care. So our knowledge is expanded in order to improve patient care. Everything comes back to patient care. The different levels of nursing, whether you're a CNA or a doctoral prepared PhD nurse, your work is for patient care. That's the one thread that ties every single person involved in nursing together, which I think is quite unique and something that we have over the other disciplines. Patient care is what it's all about. So the purpose is to advance the knowledge of the discipline. Research is systematic inquiry. Okay? It answers questions and solves problems. So in nursing, we answer the questions of nursing philosophy, education, and practices. And generally, nursing research is done by nurses. Occasionally not. Occasionally you'll have a sociologist that wants to look at us. But in general, nursing research is done by nurses. So why is it important? Research is in reinforcing the identity of nursing as an independent profession. In order to be an independent profession, in order to be a science, we need to be research-based. Like today, we were talking about making a bed and how you always put the seam up, right? The seam goes up so it's smooth against the patient, right? Is that a scientific thing? Is there any evidence that shows that the patient really is detrimentally affected by the seam down? Probably not. That is one of the only things I can think about in our practice now that doesn't have a scientific basis. Can you think of many others? I was having trouble thinking of really anything, except where the opening of the pillow goes. That's another one. The opening of the pillow goes away from the door. The closed end of the pillow goes towards the door. So you walk in, and you see, I know they didn't teach you this, but I've been teaching people this now for 3 lectures in a row starting yesterday afternoon. Because you walk in and you see a nice solid edge. You don't see the floppy pillowcase. And so I know for some reason that kind of missed the education of Dominican. But I was taught that and I've always taught it. And I don't like it when I walk in and the pillow's facing the other way. But there is no scientific evidence to back that up, right? Can you think of any? Is there any reason? No. Except the visual appeal. These two points are unusual in nursing. Most of our... Everything we do is based now on research, right? Sound evidence, nursing research. But we haven't always had nursing research by any means. We weren't even a science. What were we? Were we a profession in the beginning? A vocation, maybe? Monks did nursing, right? That was part of their calling. Even today, people say nursing is a calling. I often will ask a group of students, like my clinical group, let's say for basic, I'll say, why did you become a nurse? And it's not uncommon for people to say, it's my calling. Someone who's very religious, or I was called to nursing. I've had that response several times. People looked upon nursing in past centuries as a calling. You were called to do the good work, whether you were a monk or whatever you were. In the time of Florence Nightingale is recognized as our first nurse researcher, right? She kind of brought modern nursing to where it is today. She kind of gave it a big jump start. Florence Nightingale is a fascinating woman in that, I don't know if you know much about her, she was born to a rather upper class British family. She was able to do what she did because of all the connections she had, because of her social standing. She actually only worked at bedside about 6 months. But she did develop the philosophy that we hold now. She was a brilliant scientist. She looked at a problem, found a solution, and was able to then incorporate that into the work and practice of nursing. Fantastic. But at her time, who were the nurses? Who? At her time? Not men. Florence Nightingale lived in the mid-1800s. Poor, uneducated women and hospitals were called asylums, where the poor and sick would go. Okay, so who worked there? Women who had to make a living and who were on their own, which of course was looked very down upon at that point in society. Women should be taken care of, have families, have husbands. If you didn't have that, you might go to work as a nurse to feed yourself. Often prostitutes. Okay, it was a low level of society, a nurse was. It was Florence Nightingale who really took nursing from that low level and moved it into a profession. She saw the need and where nurses could make a huge difference in keeping people healthy and in keeping people alive. And that's what she did. And she was in a position that she could do that in British society. She said it was a calling. When she announced to her parents in her mid-20s that she was going to become a nurse, you can imagine they were appalled. What? A woman from an upper-class British family becoming a nurse was absolutely unheard of. People who had the money would have care in their homes. Asylums were the hospitals. They were asylums. They were dangerous, scary, dirty places. And this is what Florence Nightingale changed. And in doing that, she developed her philosophy and her theories on nursing that are used today. Today, there are still nursing schools based on the theories of Florence Nightingale. Her theories are still very valid, and you'll find them in research, cited in research today. An absolutely amazing woman. And think about how long that was, how long ago that was. Absolutely amazing. So after Florence Nightingale, we kind of fussed around a little bit. We moved on as nurses until about the 60s and 70s. In the early part of... Now we have the farm girls coming from the city, working and becoming nurses, and would work in hospitals. Okay? They would leave their homes and be trained. This is when the term training came about. You were trained as nurses. You weren't educated, because you weren't. You were trained to do the work, the hard work. These were very hard-working, working class, mostly all women at that point. They came in often from the farms into the cities to man the hospitals. They worked, 15-hour days. They weren't allowed to go home. They didn't have holidays off. They weren't allowed to have male visitors. It was just extreme. It's great to read, what makes up a nurse at that time. You have to be pure. You have to be a virgin. You have to be, it was just very interesting. You had to scrub. They scrubbed at the walls. They made the food for the patients. That's where nursing was. And then it slowly evolved. It got a little better. In the 50s, there were appliance nurses. Now we had some schools of nursing. But what was women's role in the 50s? Very much the stay-at-home mom, right? So women would work part-time a little bit to get a new fridge. Okay? So this was the day of the appliance nurses. They were educated. They did go to school a little bit to be trained. There were nursing schools. So we'd gotten that far. But still, the role of women was in the home. So we had appliance nurses that would work a little bit. Oh, it's okay to work if your children have gone off to college, or maybe they're in school, or you need a new washer. Okay, so that was kind of, that's where nursing was then. Does it sound like much of a science or a profession? No, and it wasn't. It really wasn't. That's why it's fascinating to talk to nurses of that age. They don't have a clue what we're doing today. They can't even imagine where nursing is today. In the 60s and 70s, what was going on with women? Remember? No, you don't remember. I remember. What was going on with women? Women's rights. Yeah. So what do you think these trained nurses, do you think they put up with that anymore? No. At that point, nursing wanted to be a discipline. It wanted to be a profession. We wanted to be elevated. And it went right along with what was going on in politics, in the political arena, in society in general. Nursing kind of jumped onto that. And nursing emerged as an independent discipline for the first time. There was a summer course, I believe it was at Yale, in the early 60s, and they thought, should we move nursing education into the universities? Prior to that, nurses were taught in the hospitals. They were taught the tasks of nurses. They thought there was absolutely no need for a nurse to be educated. Oh, no, that might be very dangerous. You might actually question something that a physician said, heaven forbid. Okay? So they didn't want us educated. That was the whole idea. Let's just keep the labor force in the hospital, right? Because that's what nurses were, great labor. Carried bed, da, da, da. All right. So now women's movement, and women aren't going to put up with that. So they tried it at Yale. Let's take a few nurses for the summer and see how it works in a university setting. Well, it was very successful. From there, nursing moved into academia. This wasn't a fast move, let me tell you. When I first started teaching, which was 10 years ago, I was working in a small university in Missouri, and a couple years before that was the first year that they allowed the nursing students to participate in graduation and walk across the stage. Because the president of that university considered nursing a trade. Therefore, the nurses could not walk. They graduated with BSNs, but they could not participate in graduation. Right? Yeah. So they had their own pinning ceremony, and then they weren't allowed to graduate with their baccalaureate degrees with the rest of the university. Terrible. So it's not that long ago. You know, it's like 15 years ago, and that was still happening. So I want you to appreciate our history and where we came from, because it's very young. Our history as a science is extremely young. Okay, so the 60s, 70s. Another thing that happened during that time, okay, we're moving education. We're moving education for nurses into colleges. Yale was a little different. Not a lot of universities jumped on board. But what the government did was said, okay, we need more nurses. Let's develop them at the junior college level. Makes sense, right? Got these junior colleges, perfect place. So nursing as a trade school profession really moved well then. A lot of associate degree nurses. And then nursing theory also started to be accepted. Junior colleges were funded by the United States government if they adopted a theory. So many were Florence Nightingale's theory of nursing. So in this program, we've never had a nursing theory course at the baccalaureate level. Often, baccalaureate-prepared nurses, and actually associate degree-prepared nurses too, were made to take a theory course because the colleges were funded on the fact that they were based on a theory. Science is based on theory. So we were moving into being more of a science. If we had a theory, then we could get the government funding to have these schools. It was awful to have theorist classes in an associate degree program. I mean, you talk about theory in doctoral level education. But unfortunately, many of us had to go through these horrible undergraduate theory courses that we didn't understand anything about because the universities got funded or the colleges funded them. So we're moving along. Okay, we're becoming more and more of a science, more and more recognition. Part of the problem was moving into the university. As you can see here, there are some problems with the nursing department fitting into a university structure, aren't there? Yeah. People don't understand that we spend time in hospitals. They don't get it. They don't. We don't fit. It's not an excellent fit. So this was a real problem. So I said, what do we do with them? What do we do with these more educated nurses? So we moved on, and we definitely persevered. There were nurse scientists and nurse theorists, okay, theories of nursing, which simply means how should nursing be? What are all the aspects of nursing? What are the concepts? So nursing got a little more heady, right? We're looking at not just bedside practice, but we're looking at nursing as a science. Nurse scientists at that point could not get their degrees in nursing. You could only get an associate degree in nursing. So they would have doctorates in anthropology and education and something else, which is still the case today. And look, among our faculty, there are a few PhD-prepared faculty members in nursing. There are many education. We only graduate in this country 400 PhD-prepared nurses a year. Those are true nurse scientists. We're still not moving real fast, okay? We're still coming along. We've got a ways to go. But in 1986, the National Institutes of Health, NIH, okay, National Institutes of Health, recognized nursing. That was amazing. That means that now nursing research was funded by the U.S. government. What the NIH does is fund science so that our country can progress, so that we can learn, so that we can grow, so that disciplines can grow. And nurses were then able to apply for grants and do research to grow the field of nursing. To test things like, is it better to use a cotton ball or a 2x2 after you take out an IV line? Actually, the research shows that a 2x2 or 1x1, the little ones, are better than a cotton ball. There's more bacteria in a cotton ball. Okay, things like that. What wound care techniques are better? Okay, these very, very basic things. Do we have to bathe people every day? These basic things that have been built on tradition, right, are now soundly based in science. So the NIH, the government, started funding us to look at these things. What's the best way to do this? Let's start looking at nursing practice as a science. Everything else was exploding in healthcare too. We needed more nurses, which is great. And we needed to have the practice not just be tradition, not just be hearsay, not just be, because Mary Jo, the old nurse, says that's how we do it. Right? So that was wonderful. In 1993, the National Institutes of Nursing Research was founded. Now we have our own institute within the National Institutes of Health. We have a whole division that's nursing. Fantastic. Now we are recognized as a science. This was huge for nurse scientists. Now a scientist can apply to the NIH, the NINR, get money to do research on wound healing, on how soon should we ambulate somebody after surgery, all these things that now you take for granted. You're coming and you take it for granted. Yeah, it's evidence-based. Your science backs it up. Not true 25 years ago. We're very, very young, which is, I think, very exciting. And you'll still see glimpses of our past. If you know a little bit about our history, you'll see. You'll see glimpses. You'll see it in older nurses. Unfortunately, you'll also see it in younger nurses. For instance, I work with a college woman. She was soon to be grad. She's a graduate now. And she was doing her preceptorship. And she said, "What do you teach?" And it was a summer. I was teaching nursing research. And I said, "Nursing research?" And she said, "What's that?" I couldn't even talk to her. I had to walk away. I also was talking to a nurse from England who was about my age. And she said, "What do you teach?" And I said, "Nursing research." And she went, "Oh." And she walked away. So even though baccalaureate-prepared nurses have a background in nursing research, you are taught to do research, and we'll talk a lot more about this as the course goes on. Not everybody buys into it yet. And I think that's because we have a very young history as science. You don't get that feeling when you're here. Most of your faculty is doctorally prepared. We're looking at nursing as a science. That's nursing today to us. So to bring it to you, that's all you know. But in reality, there are a lot of people that still don't necessarily think that about nursing. So be aware in your travels. You can look for this. So we have status now. We've attained full institute status within the NIH. That's wonderful. Now we have funding. We can do research. So what did this... this provided a lot of funding for nursing research. We also can get funding from other national institutes of health. For instance, if you're doing something for the environment that has to do with nursing, you might go to the environmental section of the NIH to get your funding. So we're not limited to just nursing. You can apply for grants within other national institutes of health. NIH grants are the most respected and coveted period in science. To get an NIH grant is absolutely awesome. Like, we make a huge deal about it. There are only like two or three that exist here right now in this campus. It's a big deal to get that kind of funding. Sometimes they're little, sometimes they're multi-million dollar. And I've worked on multi-million dollar nursing NIH grants, which is very, very exciting at huge institutions. It's really fun. This is where nursing is growing. So we decide where we're taking our science. I remember a few years ago I was at the Oncology Nursing Society Conference of Research. Okay, it was in San Diego. I'll never forget it. And I didn't know what to do. I was kind of hanging out. So I kind of popped in this room and sat in on this session. Well, it happened to be the session where the leaders of the ONS, the Oncology Nursing Society, were deciding where to take nursing science. They were saying, where do we want to go? What do we need right now in nursing science and oncology? These people were sitting around truly deciding the course of the science. It was absolutely outstanding. We need research in this area. We need to put out a call and have people doing work here. We need work here. So we're looking at nursing at a completely different level. How are we going to move it? Where are we going to move it? How are we going to grow our science? Where do we need to grow? Where do we need to grow nursing? What needs to be discovered to reinforce our practice? Because remember, with nursing, everything comes back to the bedside. I was also at another Oncology Nursing Society conference, which was a more general conference, and there was a group of nurses from an oncology unit, I don't remember, Minnesota or somewhere. They brought most of their nurses from the unit. They were hearing research right then. They were changing their protocols during breaks. Oh, well, let's make it this way. Look, we just heard that. Yeah, okay. That's how quick we're moving, right? Nursing research is extremely exciting. It's fast-moving. And you may not be at all aware of it as a bedside nurse. The college graduates don't even know it exists. So there's this whole other level of nursing that many bedside nurses don't even know is happening. All they know is their protocols are handed down, and this is how we do it. They have no idea where that comes from. Where that comes from is from nurse scientists doing the research, getting money from the NIH, possibly nursing organizations. They fund many research projects. Sigma Theta Tau funds projects. Many societies of nursing, operating room nurses, they fund some research. Individual interest groups of nurses fund research within their special interest group, within their practice discipline. Private organizations also fund nursing. The Susan Coleman Foundation does a lot with breast cancer. They fund private nurses doing research. Okay? So your sources of... This is a test question. Your sources of funding for nursing research might be on a national level, a government agency like the NINR, nursing organizations, and private organizations. The Lance Armstrong Society, for example, funds. Okay. So before we had all this, okay, let's go way back. Before we had all this science that we are privileged to have today, we had different ways of knowing, didn't we? So traditionally, prior to the mid-20th century, the majority of nursing practice was a result of tradition, right? And you'll see that in practice today. Well, we always do it this way. Okay. You're the new guy on the block? Okay. Well, that's what we're doing. Luckily, most of that today is evidence-based. It is based in science. Not 10 years ago when I started nursing, believe it or not. We always give bed baths. We bathe our patients every day. I was told that when I became a new nurse, and when I didn't give a bed bath to one patient who was 90 years old, ready to die, and had skin that looked like paper thin, I was reprimanded. The research wasn't there that supported my decision not, or at least it wasn't apparent to that hospital, that supported my decision that it wasn't in the patient's best interest to bathe her. Okay, we were still going by, this is what we do, we bathe our patients in this hospital every day, why didn't you bathe that patient? Even though for me it was a conscious decision made through my own thinking, right, not to do that. That wasn't respected. What was respected was a tradition that every day we bathe our patients. We've made a huge change in just a decade. I've only been in practice like 12 years. That's huge in just a decade. Today, you wouldn't, that would never happen. So you're entering nursing at a very exciting time. So many traditional nursing practices have stood up to the rigid scientific critique that we're doing. Many have not, like bathing. So now we're to the point where everything we do is science-based. But another source of knowledge from the olden days was authority. Well, the physician said, so that's how we have to do it, right? No. I'm sorry. A doctorally prepared PhD nurse is better educated than a clinician, a physician who's not a PhD. In science, they have more research background, they have more scientific knowledge than your normal MD who's a clinician. So, if someone says we're doing it that way because the MD said, I go, where's the research? Show me the research. And this happened to me, which was rather uncomfortable, because it happened to me with one of our graduates. About a year ago, where I worked, they were having a horrible time with infection and PICC lines. So the infection control doc got the brilliant idea that we would wrap all the PICC lines when they weren't in use with sterile gauze and tape them. So one of our graduates was involved in patient education. She was a patient educator for the hospital because as a baccalaureate prepared nurse, she was hired as a patient educator. So she's educating everybody, telling everybody we have to do this, and I come in and I go, where's the research? And she goes, oh no, Dr. So-and-so said this is what we do. She's the infection control doc. And I said, where's the research? And she went, I don't know, what are you talking about? And I went, you took my research class and you're telling everybody to do this for that. I said, you haven't looked it up? You haven't done a lit review? You're putting this policy in effect with no background because it's NDSET? And she went, and I said, well, let's just go look it up. And she goes, I can't. I don't have access to any of the databases anymore that we're going to talk about on Friday. And I said, I do. Come on. And I pulled it all up on her computer, and I was so mad I had to get back to my patients. I don't know what happened. But at that hospital, they're still wrapping the PICC lines. I've never seen PICC lines wrapped in sterile gauze before. It sounds really dumb to me. What they're doing in general with their high rate of infection of PICC lines is they have this lovely little cap that screws on that has an antibiotic in it. Now we're talking. Now, does that make sense? Yes. Does wrapping them in gauze? Maybe it does. But I was never too keen on doing it until you show me the evidence. So that's the kind of nurse I want you guys to be. Show me the evidence. What do you mean? We don't go by authority anymore. That doesn't work. Not for a modern nurse, okay? It's no longer a way of knowing. Traditionally, it has been. And unfortunately, for some nurses, it still is. Okay? So no, you show me the science. Show me the research. Show me what backs it. Then I'll buy on. Not just because the infectious disease control doc thought it was a good idea. Who actually has less of an education and research than I do. Yeah, that wasn't happening for me. Trial and error. You know already from your practice, trial and error works, doesn't it? Yeah. You ever try to do a tube feeding and keep it clean and not have it dripping all over everything? You need at least two more hands, right? So you futz and you figure it out, and trial and error, you figure out that you darn well better have that washcloth under there or the paper towel or something that you can grab because it's gonna leak, right? And then the CNA is going to be really mad because they have to clean the bed. So these are the kinds of things that we learn from practice, and that works today. And that works in small things like how are you going to make your two hands do something that it really takes four hands to do, correct? So that is a way of knowing in nursing that truly works, as does personal experience. It's been my experience that whatever, right? You know that people get an upset stomach when they take codeine, so you're going to give it after the meal, not at 7 o'clock when it was prescribed. Okay? That kind of thing. You just know. All right? So certainly your experience, your personal experience is certainly a valid way of knowing. Intuition. What do you think? Is that a valid way of knowing today? Nursing intuition? How do you feel about that?
Valid.
Valid. Right. No?
It can be from your experience, from traditional authority, trial.
Kind of could all come together in your intuition.
Sure.
Definitely in your clinical judgment. But I'm talking more about that kind of sense you get. Have you had that in nursing? Something's wrong here. Something's going to go real wrong. I better watch that patient. You know? Where is that? Where does that come from? Does it? Yeah, you get better at it. But it also comes from some unknown place inside you, right? Yeah, you hone it with experience. Absolutely, it's honed from experience. But also the ability to tap in and trust it. Some of us are pretty good at it, others aren't. When's a person going to die? It's got another 2 days, I'm telling you. I'm usually pretty right. Or if I feel real bad about a patient, I listen to it now. So for me, intuition is a very valid part of my practice. And I suggest you hone it. It is important, and it is something that we use. Nurses have used intuition always. I mean, whatever, if you were a monk, I'm sure you used intuition. Nurses have always used it. But be careful. I have a physician friend, and he said, that when he was a very young physician, he didn't listen to nurses who would call and say, I feel there's something wrong with this patient. He'd go, yeah, well, tell me what's going on. And they said, nothing. What do you mean? There's no change of vitals. Everything's fine, but I think you need to come down and look at him. Sorry, give me the hard data. That's what physicians like, right? The male model. Objective, what's happening. And so if a nurse kind of subjectively says, that's why we teach you SBAR, because often that kind of thing is going to get rejected by people trained in a more traditional male model, right? But often we're right. And he says, as he's continued in practice, now when a nurse calls and says, I think something's wrong, and he says, give me the data, and the nurse says there isn't any, he says, how are you feeling about it? Or he'll say to me, how's that patient look? And I know when he says that, he means, how are you feeling about that patient? But he words it as, how do they look? He means, what sense am I getting? They're doing okay. Yeah, they're okay. I don't know. Okay, so then he can say, oh, well, all right, I better come in and look. Or, yeah, everything's fine. Okay? So we use it, and you get this sense. And yes, it's based on experience. Sure, absolutely it is. Because you're reinforced when you're right. Okay, but the bottom line is that subtle feeling that creeps in. So, yeah, I think it's a valid way of knowing, but that's a judgment call. Some people may not. All right. Nursing in general, we accept intuition as a part of our practice. We listen to each other when they say, something's going on. And we watch our patients carefully when we feel something's going on. Yes, it's based on experience. Maybe based on some objective data, but a lot of it's subjective. And listen to your patients' families and your patients when they say, something's going on, I know it, I feel it. They're right 90% of the time. Unfortunately, what I have to then say to them is, your patient, your mom or whatever, the body's not showing me anything yet. There's nothing that I can treat. I can't move forward and ask for any drugs anymore. I can't, because they're not showing me anything. So I can't move forward. What I can tell you is I will watch them very closely because I believe you. And always, sure enough, you know, I'm watching the urine. If it's cloudy, I'm taking their temp more often. I'm really monitoring those vital signs. Sure enough, in 12 hours, there'll be a problem. I'll pass on to the next nurse. Watch this. The daughter feels that something's going on. So we do that in our practice. We use intuition. We also really use logical reasoning, right? We cram that into you. You've got those NCLEX questions down now, right? Yeah, what's logical? What's going to be the best answer? What's the logic? Nursing is firmly based on logic. I'm sure you've realized that so far. What's the logical answer that's probably right? The body works extremely logically. Therefore, logical reasoning works very, very well with nursing. Everything is connected, and if you have some basic understanding, you can put all the pieces together and come up with a conclusion that's probably right. Most of the time it is, right? Most of the time. So we use our logical reasoning a lot of times. And we use the scientific method. And that's what we're going to talk about in this class. The scientific method is employed when viewing nursing as a science. And that's what we're doing. Okay? So sound nursing has its origin in logic, in observation, in practice. Research is systematic, and although not infallible, is considered the most reliable source of nursing logic. Okay? And the most reliable source of nursing knowledge. We have all these other ways, but disciplined research, and that's the study that we're going to undertake in this course, the study of disciplined nursing research. That is the work that our practices today are built on. That is from the discipline research that the protocols are written, and those are the practice guidelines that we follow today. And that's what we're learning in this course. So, in order to do research, you have to conduct scientific inquiry. We collect data, just like any other scientist. It's collected from surroundings through our senses. And nursing research describes things, it explains phenomena, or it predicts events. So we may describe the experience of living with an ostomy, we may describe the effects of a certain treatment on wound healing. We may explain why we use a 2x2 rather than a cotton ball. Explain why we get patients out of bed early, post-surgically. We predict events. We know very well if we have those post-op patients walking, their healing time, their time in bed is going to be less. They're going to have less post-op complications, right? So we predicted the events. Post-op complications will be less with early ambulation. Right? Okay? So we predict events. That's what we do in nursing science. We use the scientific method. Remember back in fifth grade, we learned the scientific method? Mm-hmm. Yeah, same thing. Hasn't changed. We select and define a problem. Where's that problem going to come from in nursing? Where do you think nursing problems come from? How does a nurse scientist decide what they're going to explore? Maybe the Oncology Nursing Association said, we need research on thrush as a side effect of chemotherapy. All right. Maybe it came from a need, a call from research. And there are calls from research from the NINR and from specific nursing organizations. How else would we select a problem?
Okay.
I mean, tell me, like what? A sentinel event?
Yeah.
What do I mean by a sentinel event?
Serious, but like...
Yeah, a big deal.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen. How's that? A serious event that is not a positive. Certainly, absolutely. Like the increased PICC line infection rates. That would be a sentinel event. We have an increase. Our data shows an increase. We've got to do something about that. My choice would not have been cover the lines. Okay. Yeah? How else? How else are we going to find a problem? From what we observe in clinical practice, often nursing problems come from nurses like yourselves that observe a problem in clinical practice. This doesn't make sense to me. Or look at what's going on here. Right? We have this. This is how we're addressing. Perfect example is we used to do drier dressings than we do today. We used to put dry dressings in. And thought being, it's going to soak up all the excretate from the tissue. That was years and years ago, decades ago. Well, we know very well that what that happens with that is you pull out the gauze and you pull off all the tissue, right? So now so that wasn't working. So now we do damp to dry dressings. Okay, we used to call them wet to dry. Now they're damp to dry. When I learned them, they were wet to dry. So it's evolving. We went, oh my goodness, now we have to get everything wet. Well, now we're not so wet. Now we're damp. Okay, now we're making sense, okay? But that's the evolution of the science because we studied it. We looked at it. We looked at wound healing times. And that question came from practice. So many, if not the... I can probably safely say the majority of nursing questions come from practice. But there are also philosophical questions. How should we handle this ethically? What's a nurse's role here? So that it's not all practice-oriented. How do nurses approach this? What is the role of spirituality in nursing? I had a colleague who wrote a beautiful paper on spirituality in nursing, a research-based paper. Right? How do nurses feel about this? So we study ourselves as well as our patients and as well as our practice in general. Maybe what are 12-hour shifts better than 8 hours? How does that affect patient care? How does that affect errors? How does that affect nurses' job satisfaction? Okay? So you formulate the question or the hypothesis or both. You may have a question, you may have a hypothesis, you may have both a question and a hypothesis. And you remember the scientific method, you collect data, you analyze the data, and you report the results. And that's it. That's the whole course right here. That's what we're going to look at. We're going to look at how we collect the data, how we analyze the data, and how the results are reported, and whether or not we want to use it. If it's good, you might want to change your practice, right? You might want to. But today, we're going to look at some reports of research later. You don't know what's good or what's bad, do you? You don't even probably have a firm grasp on what a report of research is, do you? That's why you're taking the course. So hopefully by the end, you'll be able to look at a report of research and go, that is bogus, look at that. What are they thinking? And put it down and say, I'm not reading past the first page. Not worth my time. Or you're going to get somebody saying, whoa, look at the rigor. This was very well conducted. Look how they control for that extraneous variable. This is good. This was very well done. Wow, yeah. This is some interesting results. I think I'm going to, you know, take this up with my superiors. Maybe we should change this protocol. It's not like we're doing this right, according to this article. Okay? So that's the idea. We want you to be able to look at the science that's coming at you, and it will continue to come at you in volumes throughout your entire career. Some you will think is good research. You will adopt it and change your practice. And you may very well adopt it for your whole hospital, your unit, like those oncology nurses who are making changes right there based on the research that they learned at that conference. You may very well be right there making those changes that affect patient care. It will be your decision, your ability to look and see what is sound and good research or not. Right? And that's part of being a baccalaureate prepared nurse, to be able to do that. So how does it all work? You start with a nurse scientist. Now, let's see, am I going to do it? Okay. So who's a nurse scientist? Are you guys nurse scientists? No. You're not a nurse scientist. A nurse scientist has a PhD in nursing and does research in nursing. Any PhD in any discipline is charged with growing that discipline. So look around. There are zillions of them all over where you look around. You're going to see a PhD. They're educators, yes, but their charge as holding that degree is to further their science, whether it be in philosophy, mathematics, it doesn't matter. Their charge is to further the science. So a nurse scientist is someone with a PhD in nursing. Does not mean that others don't do research in nursing. People with other PhDs in different disciplines do work in nursing. People with other degrees, such as DMPs, nurses, degrees in education, also are nurses and do research in nursing. Are they nurse scientists? I don't know. That's kind of a gray area. Personally, I think someone has to have a PhD in nursing to be a nurse scientist. But that's all. That's not really relevant. Many will say that anybody who does research in nursing is a nurse scientist. Anyway, whoever, this group of people, however you want to define them, very well educated, experienced, have an idea, a question, a problem, something that they want to explore. Okay? They're going to have a research project. They found something that they want to look into. So they write a proposal. What is a proposal? Proposals are extremely difficult to write. I've written several to the NIH. One was funded. It was very nice. And there are pages and pages and pages of little print in the little boxes. Tell us about your methods. Exactly how do you plan to conduct this study? What is your population? How do you plan to collect your data? Who are you going to use? What authority do you have? How do you have this? Da, 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 da. Pages and pages and pages. Saying exactly how you propose to conduct this research. How are you going to carry this out? It's going to come to a conclusion. It's going to be good for humanity, for the citizens of the U.S. And that's what the NINR wants, the national, they want. Okay, how is this going to better the people? How is this going to better our country if you do this research? So you write a proposal, and you really, it's going to be real strong. You're going to tell them how great your research is going to be, how much rigor you have built in. It's tight, it's hard, it's going to show great data. Okay, so you write this great proposal. That's good, but you use the proposal to then get funded. So you send it off to the NINR, right? You send it off to the Lance Armstrong Foundation. You send it off to Sigma Theta Tau, hoping that they will like your work so much, your idea, your concept, and how you plan to go about it, that they will give you money to do it. That's what neuroscientists do. So let's say I write a great proposal and I get a $1 million grant from the NINR. What's that going to do to my teaching? Am I going to be able to live off that $1 million grant? How do you know that? You know, no, yeah, right. No, absolutely not. Do I get that $1 million? Nope. Does my salary change? No. Generally, neuroscientists are associated with large research universities. Dominican's trying to be a research university. It's kind of a junior research university. UC Med's a large research university. UCLA is a large, Davis, okay? Large research universities. Generally, people that are get these huge grants are associated with large research universities. Doesn't mean always. Dominican's starting to pick up a few. We're kind of a junior level. We're getting up there. The money goes to the university, who then doles it out to the researcher. The researcher needs to rent office space, equipment, some of this great... What is that thing that they built over there by the tennis fields for the... There's some fungi lab or whatever. That's a grant, and that was built with money, okay, from the university. But yeah, the money for the grant went to our science department, who then doled out the money to build that thing, whatever it is. You'll see it if you walk over. It's a fence. Okay, and the trees all have little marks on them. Anyway, it's happening over there. That all came from grant money. But did the researcher in charge of that get any of that grant money? No, not a dime. It just went to the university to pay for the research itself. So what does a researcher get out of it? Do you think whoever got that grant money, I don't know who it is, I probably should, is also teaching their 12 units and working on that grant too? Actually, no. They can buy out of their teaching contract. So they can say, okay, I'm only going to teach 6 units. I'm going to buy out, spend the rest of my time doing this research, and then the grant's going to pay, half my salary is going to come from the grant. So that's how it works. Sometimes a researcher gets such a large grant that 100% of their salary comes out of the grant. Is that researcher making any more money? No, they're still making their professor's salary. Okay, which is very interesting. So you think, oh, wow, these people have a $5 million grant. Awesome, they're rolling in it. You don't have any more money. Personally, they do have a little more freedom. And there's some nice bennies in that I've traveled a lot of different places presenting research. I had a great trip to Europe. I was in Rome for 9/11 because I was presenting a paper in Genoa, Italy. It's very cool. Okay, so, yeah, there's some bennies that go along. That trip was paid for out of the research funds. So, but basically the salary doesn't change. Okay? So researchers, even though they're highly educated, they have tons of student loans, they're probably making less than a full-time bedside nurse in ICU, in nursing, which... brings up a very interesting point about nursing. We're all kind of paid the same. You know, no matter how high you are, the salary level doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference. Whether you're a professor, whether you're a bedside nurse, whether you're an NIH million-dollar funded researcher, it's not a lot of change, which is, I think, fascinating about nursing. But the good thing about that is we're all together. We're all on a fairly level playing field, and we're all working towards a good new patient. And we're all doing what we do best for the patient, which I think is kind of great about our discipline, and that differs from other disciplines, right? It's kind of neat. So, what did we do? And that was funding. Okay. Then they do the research. They actually carry out the work. They do what they said they were going to do in the proposal. And what comes out of that? New knowledge, right? Knowledge is generated. We've grown the science. We have new knowledge. We now know that I'm sure research was done on those nice little caps that go over the pick lines, which is, I'm sure, the better way to go rather than the funky gauze wrap thing that's going on. Right? I'm sure there's sound research to show that those work, or else they couldn't be marketed. There's probably some nice, good research if that hospital would bother to look at them, or my student would bother to look at them. Right? Okay. So new knowledge is generated. New ways of caring for the patients are brought forward. Better patient care. It all goes back to the patient. So this is how nursing science has grown. Come up with a question. Okay. You create a proposal. That's when you say exactly how you're going to what steps you're going to move through to answer that question. How are you going to do it? How are you going to come up with an answer? But in order to do this research project, you need money. So you're going to submit your proposal to funding organizations. Now, the review process is rather interesting. And this is, again, one of the places you're going to learn to judge, is it good research or is it bad? Or is it good research or is it research that you're not going to really take seriously? Or bad research? The review process. Okay, how is it reviewed? In the most funding organizations of any size and status, the proposals are sent out for peer review. So let's say you send it to the NINR and you have some research you want to do on wound healing. They will send your proposal to five expert nurses on wound healing. They will score your project on a rubric. Okay? They'll come together. Together they will decide on a rubric and give your project a score. Right? And then, depending on how much money the government has for the NINR, the top, whatever, 100, 200, projects will get funded. And nobody else will. And it's simply on a score. So that's one thing you look at in nursing research. Who is the funding agency, and how do they determine who gets funded? Is it because somebody's uncle sits on the board? Maybe. That's going to make you look at that research a little differently than if it was a peer-reviewed group, right? It's the kind of thing you look at. Who funded this? Where did that money come from? Did it come from a personal investor? Somebody's great-grandmother who left them $200,000? Is that where that money came from? Or was it scrupulously reviewed by a peer of experts and then funded? Okay, so that's one of the things you consider. So it's reviewed. Generally, it's reviewed. It's either funded or not funded. Okay? If it's not funded, the NINR, at least, is very nice, and they tell you what they don't like. Pages of what they don't like. Okay? Not fun. You think your student evaluations are hard to read. You should see those. Not great. So then, if you're very brave, you'll do all the revisions, and you'll resubmit it. Okay? With the NINR, you're allowed to do that three times before they say it's not worthy. Or you can say, well, obviously, they didn't like it so badly, I got a 0 out of 100 that I'm going to reject the whole thing. And the other, some valid holes in what I was thinking, and I'm going to pursue another course. Okay. But if you're funded, you carry out your research, and then you disseminate your findings. What does that mean? Disseminate your findings. Kind of a strange word. Disseminate findings. You spread them around, right? How do you do that in nursing research? Disseminate findings. What good is research if it doesn't get out to those who can use it? Correct? Articles, journals, conferences, posters, whatever. You're really... If the NIH funds you, and most funding organizations, they want to make darn sure you don't just do the research for research's sake. You give it to the public so that it can be used, because that's why they funded you to begin with, so that you grow the science, so the practice of nursing would be improved. Okay, so you disseminate your findings, yes, through conferences, through journal articles, you get it out there. So, nursing science is now advanced through the production of knowledge. We've just produced nursing knowledge, haven't we? Well, have this person who put it. The practice is improved. And again, overall goal of nursing research is to improve nursing practice, which is very cool. Unlike just gaining knowledge for knowledge's sake, we rarely do that. We gain knowledge to improve patient care. So we're a very practice-oriented discipline, that all our focus is on our practice. That's why we generate knowledge. Unlike a philosopher who will just think it's cool to generate knowledge. And that's why you're nurses and not others. It also looks like you're getting really tired and I'm losing you. So why don't you take a quick break and we can look at different types of research when you come back. In about, let's say 1:30.